Hello and welcome back. You're listening to the Bringing It All Back Home podcast. And I'm your host, Charles. And today, it's another analog combo episode. This one is about the Contax Carl Zeiss Planar T 50mm 1.7 lens. This is the CY mount. And this is also combined with the 1992 Contax ST. So that's the name of the combo, but really this episode's all about how I got drawn into the Contax CY thing, how this particular 1.7 planar is the best 50 I own when it comes to shooting film. And what it kind of did to my head, the somewhat strange journey I went on trying to take it forward. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a divergent history into the cameras I needed to work with it, how it all kind of got started. It's a bit of a bumpy journey, but really this is all about that 51.7. I hope if there's any takeaway from today's analog combo, it's, yeah, there's a couple of lenses out there under the Contax CY mount that actually do not only live up to the hype, but can take you down some interesting roads. So yeah, if you're interested in a good analog combo that may inspire you to go out and purchase some stuff, some of it not really that expensive, relatively speaking. Listen in. Take a journey here with me this morning. So yeah, I'm going to take a nice gulp of water here, and let's get started. So to get started with this combo episode, I really want to focus on kind of a little bit of a somewhat irrelevant chronology, but at least it sort of will kind of make sense, I suppose, at the end. So it's late in the year 2021, and I'm in the mood to buy a new SLR camera. I've been looking at these Contax cameras, particularly the original Contax. So again, this is the Contax. This is not the Contax point and shoot. This is not the Contax medium format. This is the Contax that they kind of got into the whole market back in the, what was it, back in the 70s? Yeah, so just to cheat a little bit here, I do have a website up from Camerapedia Fandom. I will put a link to this, but basically the name Contax, which has an enormous, deep, deep history, was licensed to the Japanese camera maker Yashica. Gotta love Yashica, you know, I sure do. And they created a new brand of 35mm cameras, interchangeable lenses, in cooperation with the German company at that time. So it's basically saying Yashica was a production giant, and they needed perhaps to expand sales with a little help of some brand recognition. So they had a kind of top secret project. And they even hired the group known as the F. Alexander Porsche Group. And they wanted to come up with a beautiful ergonomic new camera that they would premiere at Photokina in 1974. I think overall the market was kind of what we would call like advanced consumer or consumer pro or pro-ish. I don't think they were literally trying to compete with Nikon on the photojournalism side, trying to take advantage of cameras that can be thrown against a wall or accidentally submerged in the Mekong River. These are, yeah, going for like the more high-end cameras, taking advantage of the greatest, at that time, the earliest days of electronically controlled shutters and all that good stuff. Anyhow, the first camera was called the RTS, And that's where my journey kind of started. So I was just in the model for an RTS. And even today, if you get on eBay and take a look at the RTS, they are not that expensive. And alongside of that RTS, which I did find, I found one again in December of 2021. I found one for $85. And I needed to get a lens. And of course, I wanted to just start with a 50. But as you approach these contacts, cameras, and their Zeiss C/Y lenses, you have to take into consideration some of the newer terminology. So I've got another article, which I'm going to link from Fred Miranda. The lenses could be described as AEJ or AEG. That's referring to the lenses that are compatible mostly with the older contacts cameras. AE in this case just standing for auto exposure, G standing for made in Germany, J standing for made in Japan. So you've got these, you know, typically you'll see like AEJ lenses, or you've got the MMJ, which is, I guess, more compatible with the newer contacts and can be used in all kinds of multi-modes. But the other more important difference is if you're a bokeh fanatic and you're going to be shooting wide open all the time and you really are obsessing over the shape of your bokeh balls. According to this article, most, if not all, of the earlier lenses, again, the ones described as AEJ, say, they're going to have some interesting shapes within, say, wide open and 2.8, what they described as a ninja star aperture shape. And this shape is also seen in bright specular highlights. So, for instance, the 51.4 AEJ, and if you shoot it at, I guess, 1.8 and f2 and up to 2.8, you're going to be seeing some of these ninja star examples. Right, and as you will probably expect, the people who obsess about not having the ninja stuff, who don't want to have the ninja stars, they're willing to pay extra money for it. So the MMJ, or if you can find an MMG, but typically it's made in Japan, they are going to cost a bit more money. So yeah, it's a no-brainer. I don't shoot that often at, when I'm shooting with a 50, I'm not often shooting at the wide open apertures unless there's something, you know, I really, really want to just focus on and close in front of me. And to be honest, I don't give a rat's ass about how the bokeh is in the background as much anymore, except if I'm doing a portrait shoot, and then I'm not usually using a 50. I'm typically using an 85, which usually is going to have some awesome kind of bokeh, or I'm really just shooting film with my medium formats, and then it doesn't matter because the bokeh is going to look delicious. So yeah, not my problem. I went for the AE lens, and I found one for an AEJ. I found one out there for $179. So just to recap, it's December, it's 2021. I now have my first contacts kit. They have both successfully gotten here. One is an RTS, the original. As you go searching through eBay, you're going to see a mixture of the RTS 1, 2, and 3. Mine is the original version, and I have the Zeiss Planar, which I got for $179, and it looks a tiny bit dinged up. Not a huge amount, but like it looks like the lens has been not so much dropped, but it's got a bit of wear, literally on the lens ring, and one tiny, tiny segment of it is bent a tiny bit, but not enough so that it, well, actually, yeah, I take that back. I've never tried putting a filter on it. But yeah, it's not in the greatest condition when it comes to visual stuff. And yeah, I just double checked. I can get a filter on mine. So now I'm ready to take my first shoot. I, at the time, had some Acros. And at the time, I was really big on, you know, going out for a little bit of a morning light shoot and then taking advantage of stand developing using the rod and all. So a terrific combination. Can't go wrong with that combination. So again, I'm shooting 35 millimeter, camera here. I've got a roll of, I guess, 36 exposures of Acros. I do my morning light shoot, just walking around the blocks near me. And I guess on my day off, you know, I put it in the tank and for an hour let it stand develop, just having one shake in the half hour mark. And then I start to begin to let it dry, and then I scan my results. What popped out at me once I got these results back was a breathtaking astonishment over how incredible these shots looked. And they were mundane subjects, just lit nicely by the December light. And admittedly, the December morning light is nice. It can be very, very tasty if you get out there at just the right time. So basically I took a couple of shots around the neighborhood here. And I believe, these are just walk around shots. Like I have one just the light hitting a brick wall. I have one of a building across the street from mine that used to be a motel getting hit with the morning light and some nice shadows. And I had another one where I think I did manage to take it over into AC by the skate park and just got some morning light. But what was really flipping me out at the time was it had a look that was unlike any of my other 50s. It kind of just raised, as the cliche goes, it raised the bar. It's not that it had this incredible, hard to describe micro contrast. No. So it's not like it doesn't have this kind of like, you know, infinitesimal micro contrast combined with, I don't know, what's that? I guess that Leica look where it's this weird combo of micro contrast and glow. No, this is just ridiculous overall sharpness. Ridiculous overall sharpness. Like incredibly perfect sharpness that extended beyond just the center of the frame. And I'm thinking, okay, was this just a luck? Was this just something where I lucked out? And that's where I began. That's where really the journey began. And what I mean by the journey is the weird conundrum that I had with the camera, not the lens. I knew the lens was bang on amazing. I knew the lens was incredible. I knew the lens was going to take me on a journey. But the camera, the original RTS, felt amazing in the hands. It had this feel that was near perfect. Like it just had this incredible feel, this beautiful viewfinder. It was really a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous freaking lens, you know? And where was that link I just had to it? The RTS. It was absolutely fantastic. And basically, just to read some of the things about the RTS, again, up to 2/1000th of a shutter speed. And, it also had electronically controlled shutter, and it just felt fantastic in hand. Now, what the problem I noticed, though, was that mine had this mechanical issue where the back door wouldn't shut properly. So, and I mean really wouldn't shut. Like I would load a roll of film in there and then the back door would just kind of be jammed in. So I was sort of using gaffer tape all over the back just because it looked so obvious it was going to get light leaks. And just as a heads up, let me go back to that original first roll. That was again RTS here. And yeah, so what was that? Here it is. Yeah, the 12. Let me get rid of my star ratings. And do I have any light leaks on the original? So that's interesting. So I don't. Oh no, here we go. Yeah, there's one. It's all coming back. I don't have any actual light leaks on the original, but I knew I would definitely have one if I hadn't taped it up like a madman. So yeah, that thing was just like not looking great. Because it had to be so overly taped up. But the pictures are just ridiculous. They look so freaking good. I mean, just looking back at the whole roll now, I could easily rate these a little higher than I did at the original time, just by the sheer gorgeousness of the way it handled the Acros. So what do I mean by my journey? I've discovered this gorgeous lens. but got a camera that is wonky. The back door doesn't work. So I decided to go back on eBay and I look for the same model for parts, because it's pretty obvious the back door does come off and I could just, you know, switch it out for parts. And that's exactly what I did. So looking through my eBay purchases, the next thing I bought was another version of it for just parts, and I switched out the door. But then a week or two later, I decided to buy just another version of the Contact CY mount. And essentially, so the RTS was introduced as like their top of the line. And then they got into this kind of more entry-level cameras with a lot fewer controls, I guess you could say. I don't know. It's essentially this middle-of-the-range line. So yeah, I found a list here of the, so again, the kind of like you could say, like if this was a Nikon, you know, there's the Nikon F series, of course, like the F2s and the F3s and the F4s. And then during that time, they had their mid-range versions. So in this case, though, the top of the line would be the RTS original, the RTS2, and then the RTS3, where the design really shifted gears. It no longer felt like it was still paying homage to a traditional SLR. By the time they got to the RTS3, we were into early 90s, big, chunky, heavier, plasticky cameras with all kinds of electronic stuff on them. So that's where we're going to end up. But in between the earliest sort of more mid-range versions are these Contax 137s, Contax 139s, Contax 159s, and the Contax 167MT. And that's the one that I started reaching out for. So the 167MT, if you do go hunt these guys down, and they have some really good reviews on YouTube. So the 167MT, if I'm Googling right now, yeah, they're ridiculously, look at this price. Here's one from Japan, MeterWorks, excellent, 5 stars, $64. Another one, which is going to include a flash, $100. Another one, near mint, free shipping, $104. So yeah, you can find these MTs, 167 MTs, anywhere from, let's just say, 70 to 100. No problem. Near mint, $89. So really cool. The only problem with the 167 MTs is they're not exactly going to blow you away with the aesthetics. You know, they sound great. The shutter's ridiculously cool. But yeah, there's always, it just seems like it's missing out a little bit. Anyhow, got my ST going because at some point my original RTS just became unworkable. Even with the fixed door, I forget exactly what went wonky on it, but it finally just, something just completely got jacked up. But I fell in love with the lens. So I wanted to keep using this lens. So this lens is still just so much better than any other 50 I've ever shot with, including all these 50s I have from my Minoltas. Like, they're not even in the same ballpark. I thought my Minolta 50s were pretty damn cool. This Zeiss Planar 1.7 blows it away, especially when you're shooting between, you know, f5.6 and say f11. The sweet spot at f8 is just unreal. So going back through my list of stuff here, I got at least, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. I got 5 rolls out of the RTS before it kind of tanked on me. Looks like it was going, so I had it for maybe about 4 months. But the RTS fixtures are still terrific, man. They look absolutely fantastic. Okay, yeah, there's one with a light leak, though. And then I switched to the 167 and the 167MT. And basically, once I did that, we had, I remember, some really amazing snow. And I went out and did like 3 days of shoots, 3 different times with snow. And yeah, I'm like looking up these pictures. Like, this is, I'm looking at T-Max. So for some reason, the comment, like, I'm like, whoa, this lens is absolutely astonishing. Let me just keep using, you know, the T-grain films with it. So I just at random here found a shot with the same lens with the 167 on it. And oh my God, you know, like this is T-Max 100 with ID 11, you know, D76 basically. And they're just like, holy crap. Like they just jump out at you. They just jump out at you. They're just so incredibly beautiful looking. There's just a gorgeous lens. Like it's just a lens that just makes you go, wow. You know, like what are you shooting with? What kind of freaking lens is capturing these incredibly sharp and brilliant shots? And yeah, I have a shot here. I just went on where I'm shooting obviously wide open, but it's black and white. And I don't, you know, there is no highlights that I'm worried about, ninja stars or anything. It looks fantastic. So yeah, had an absolutely amazing time using the 167. But I was noticing that I was still not using it that much. I think the 167 just doesn't give you that feedback, as it were. It doesn't really jump out of you in such an interesting way. So went on that hunt again, looking at all those different cameras, and discovered that one of the last ones they produced was the ST, the Contax ST. Yeah. So in fact, I do have, I believe, a list of the years here. Let me see if I can bring this up. And Contax models, here we go. Yeah. So it's the last year. So essentially I started, you know, with the original RTS, which was introduced to Photokina in 74. I guess its main production was 75. Thinking about doing this podcast, I would still love to get a working RTS. I think that it's an impossible dream. And again, it could be really frustrating because how many rolls am I going to have to go through before I prove to myself it's working? And then how long will it actually work before something flakes out about it? But I loved that original camera. That original RTS felt fantastic. Anyhow, my 167 MT, which was 87. Oh, what a jump there. So the RTS is 1975 and the MT is 1987. And it feels very, very much late 80s. But what I got going more recently, which is what this analog combo is about today, is the Contax ST. So that's from 92. And that was the last year that the Yashica Contax thing was going on. And I decided to jump in, grab the ST. So this is the most recent camera, the one I just went out this morning, did a photo walk with. And the one thing that really, really, really jumps out at you beyond the cheaper 80s versions is the viewfinder. The viewfinder is gorgeous. The viewfinder is exceptional. So just stop right there. You know, think about it for a second. What I'm talking about is a lens that is exceptional and a viewfinder that is exceptional. Well, you know, like at that point, it really can make the case like, well, why wouldn't you just shoot this every single day? Like, why wouldn't this be in the top three cameras that you just use all the time? And at times, yeah, it makes me wonder, why do I even keep some of these older cameras around? Because if I'm gonna, you know, if I've got a beautiful morning light and I've just invested in some, you know, not cheap film anymore, you know, whether it's T-Max or let alone Kodak Portra 400, am I really gonna get so much fun? Is the fun factor gonna be there when I'm using it on just good enough glass with just good enough cameras, when meanwhile I've got this Contax with absolutely an exceptional viewfinder, and that can go so far. You know, like when you're every single time you bring the camera up to your eye, you're like, oh, nice. You know, this is nice. This is really, really nice. It seems to have this popped as well. Like when you, and one thing I forgot to mention, all these cameras, and kind of why I guess Contax and the Contax / Yashica thing didn't last forever was they refused to go autofocus. All this stuff is manual focus, which is gorgeous. So, you know, like it's 92 and they're still making manual focus cameras. Yeah, by that point, you forget it. Like the revolution was all about autofocus, of course. Anyhow, the Contax ST has an absolutely gorgeous viewfinder. When you nail the focus, it almost has this 3D feel to it. There is nothing cluttered in that viewfinder. It's big, it's bright. At the very, very bottom, it will show you what f-stop you're in, and over toward the right, in very, very small, discrete red LED, is what shutter speed you're at. You know, it's just fantastic. It's like, yeah, I'm seeing my aperture, I'm seeing my shutter, I'm seeing this bright, high enlarged viewfinder. And without a doubt, it is a viewfinder that blows away my 90s F100, blows it away. It's something about this viewfinder that's fantastic. And again, this is the Contax ST. This is not the top of the line. So you can get these guys for under 180 at the moment. I got mine for 149, and it appears that everything seems to be working. More on that with a little asterisk at the end there. So yeah, that's my combo, and that's part of my journey. Started with the RTS, got another RTS for parts to fix the back door. Then the RTS just went wonky on me. Then I switched to the medium priced, but not quite as fun 167MT, which is still working. It's kind of like my backup, still sitting in a drawer. I turn it on once in a while. I'm like, yeah, still works. But in the meantime, I've since gone up a notch to some degree. You know, it's a recent camera. It's 92. It's the last year they even made these cameras, but I'm not going for the most expensive. So the most expensive for some reason is the RTS 3, you know, have at my fingertips the reason why, but I guess it's just got all kinds of bells and whistles. I think, is that the one where it could kind of imitate doing autofocus, I suppose? But yeah, the most in-demand one is the Contax S2, which brings back manual controls, and it's not relying completely on batteries. I think that's the S2, or is that the RX? Let me take a look for a second. Yeah, it's the S2. The S2 is the one that I would probably fall madly in love with if I could afford it. Let me rephrase that. It's not that I can't afford it. It's just that it's absurdly overpriced right now. You know, but yeah, this was their solution essentially by the early 90s. I think some people at Contax knew that the end was near because they're still selling essentially manual focus cameras. But they probably realized, I'm sure they realized that a big part of their market had been turned off essentially by the kind of perfection they were going with all the electronic stuff. So they brought back essentially a more brilliant version of their 70s models. So they went back to the original feel with a totally mechanical camera. In fact, it's even more mechanical than the original RTS, and it still had a ridiculously great shutter speeds, went up to 1/40th of a second. It has basically a lot. It uses spot metering. It has a beautiful viewfinder, and it is manual advance, manual rewind. And it's a gorgeous looking camera. Yeah, this is the perfect, according to this casual photophile article, this is the perfect film camera because it's all mechanical. It's compact. It's, of course, an SLR. And it is really, in some ways, I guess, competing with the Nikon FM3A, the Leica R6, the original OM1, and this is the S2. Now, if you go to eBay right now and you look up the Contax S2, you're going to find, let's see here, if I type in S2 rather than ST. Well, this is all over the place. So I'm seeing... this is interesting. I'm seeing an S2 anywhere from $339 to, what is this, $800? You know, it's all over the place. Strange. Yeah, you know, almost unused, $799. Excellent Plus, $3.99. Near Mint, $6.99. So these are just wildly all over the place. So I'd have to look more into that. But yeah, that kind of takes away some of the joy there. I mean, that's such a disparity in pricing. Yeah, like really, like there's one buy it now one with the Classic 85 that's ridiculously priced. Yeah, here's one Mint in box, $5.69. Okay, so maybe I shouldn't have looked at these prices. They're not as bad as I thought. This could be bad. Anyhow, yeah. If you're looking for the mechanical version of the CY mount and you're okay with spending between $400 and $600, maybe the S2 is the way to go. Obviously, for aficionados of the Zeiss stuff, that's usually where they live. They don't go for the cheaper 167 MTs. They skip the early 90s wonders, such as the one I'm totally okay with, which is the ST. And instead, they all just congregate around the Contax S2, the all mechanical, and they rave about the super expensive glass. Speaking of which, let's take a moment to talk about the super expensive glass. If you'd like to see all your savings go into a certain kind of camera and particularly a certain kind of lens, welcome to Contax, because Zeiss has all kinds of ways that you can just blast through all your savings, maybe go into debt with a credit card, who knows? But yeah, if you want to truly go into the deep end with a manual focus lens, then look no further than the CY mount. So I've been sticking with the, you know, everyman's lens, the ones no one needs if you're a cinematographer, the basic 1.750s. You're never going to get into trouble with these. There's not a single cinematographer out there who's craving that one. But if you do go into YouTube or you do hit up just Google and you start looking up, you know, manual focus cinematography lenses and type in CY, Zeiss left a legacy of glass that was very quickly discovered by more than just photographers. And I would say over the last 15 years, it's become a whole thing. You know, so if you want, if you're hooking up your vintage lenses to your very, very, very high-end video gear, your RED camera systems, whatever it is, there's a whole other world out there that also features this Zeiss glass, and of course the CY mount. But again, that's where you would get into the much faster apertures, and I believe there's one that's called like the Hollywood is a legendary one. Yeah, the 28 millimeter F2 Hollywood Zeiss. So anyhow, that's not what today's all about. Again, this is an analog combo. What I'm just suggesting is if you have not been tempted by the Contax lens stuff, and you'd like a way in, yeah, start with the 1.750. It's phenomenal. One thing I would advise, though, so as I wrap up here, be careful if you go with the RTSs. Expect with the original RTS, something could be a little wonky. I'd love to try again. In fact, I think I will. I think I will take a gamble, try to get another RTS just to see if it's hanging in there. And then most importantly, you know, with this lens, with the 1.7, don't spend more than $200. Do not. There's a lot of stuff out there on eBay that really, really runs the gamut. So for instance, if I type in, you know, the 1.7 planar, and this is of course the Zeiss, if I type this in, yeah, you're going to see a really wide range because of that whole AEJ versus MMJ. So I'm seeing an AEJ that's listed as a brand new listing near mint, 238. I'm seeing the MMJ. Now you're closer to 300, 278. But if you really look around, yeah, here's an MMJ. Here's an AEJ. You know, for 160, here's one for 179. You know, here's one for freaking $129. Yeah, that's the way to go. Do not waste any money on the MMJ. You do not need it. And I think the Boca is just still delicious with the Ninja Stars. Unless, of course, that's your thing. If that's your thing, if you are a Boca fanatic and you need to make sure your stars are not ninjas, you know, you're out of focus. Highlights are not ninja star shaped, then yeah, spend the extra money. Here's one that's $99. One last thing though, too, I keep saying one last thing, is that I did go down one more rabbit hole. I thought, well, here it is. I have two cameras. I have a working, not quite so fun, but very functional 167MT, and I have a very pleasurable 90s, you know, Contax ST. Wouldn't it be cool if I just had another 50 lens so I could just go out there and I don't know, shoot black and white, shoot color, you know, just have like another combo. So I did actually buy another 1.7, and I made the mistake. I got drawn in to the whole, oh, let me try an MMJ. Maybe I'm going to, you know, go from amazing to even super amazing. And it was truly mint. It came in there. You couldn't find anything wrong with this glass. You know, I looked at it through many, many different viewpoints because I ended up selling it. And the glass was perfectly clean. No haze, no fungus, nothing. It focused perfectly. It did not have the overall mind-blowing sharpness as the cheaper one. I don't know what it is. So I guess, there's still that thing with glass. You know, sometimes the slightly more beat up one may be lurking is still the perfect combination. I don't know what it was, you know, but I ended up selling it. I didn't need it. And again, it didn't outperform. If anything, it slightly underperformed. But yeah, go for the 1.7. If you want to try a nice, cheaper CY lens, test the waters out, find a camera. And, you know, that's where I have had personal experience with RTSs being fun to use. Fun factor out the wazoo. An absolute perfect 10 for fun. Not so fun because they went wonky on me. The 1.67s, incredible price. Not really that crazy fun. They just, I guess, they're just loaded with AA batteries. And it feels very functional, the 1.67. But if you're okay with that, that's a really good value. And again, check out the YouTube videos. There's a couple that are incredibly good raving about the 1.67. Last, I want to wrap this up now. Let's take a listen to the shutter. So once again, for the analog combo, I am holding my Contax ST. I have got my Zeiss Planar 1750, the AEJ version, and I'm going to test out the sound of this fantastic shutter. So here we go. All right, and on that note, guys, I will catch you for the next episode. All right, so that's a wrap. Thanks again for joining the podcast. And if you do want to subscribe or like, that'd be awesome. Thanks, guys.